Silence your phones and grab some popcorn. It's time for the movie club. Each week, we watch a movie and then we talk about it. And this week, Taylor and I watched Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And I was thinking as I was watching this that this movie has like a, which we talk about all the time, how Rotten Tomatoes is kind of bullshit, but it has something like, I can't find it right now, but it has something like a 74%.
Yeah, it's in the 70s somewhere. It's not like, it's not like universally acclaimed or whatever, but like, you know, it's a decent movie.
I don't understand like how roughly, you know, whatever, 25% of people have have overly negative opinions about this movie.
Well, and it's not, the thing about Rotten Tomatoes is that it's not like, it doesn't even have to be a negative opinion. It can literally be like 2.5 stars out of 5. And depending on the tone of the review, it'll switch into like a rotten review or a fresh review, just depending on like the tone.
Well, I guess that's what I'm saying is that like that many reviews came out of it going like, yeah, I don't know, whatever. Like not very good.
I'm sure there was someone I'm sure there was someone out there who's like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. This is blah, blah, blah. Because there's always someone like that. But like most of them, that's why it's kind of hard to like really trust that site. Like you can kind of trust it just as an aggregator, but it's like when people use it as a be all end all, it's like, oh, that's not exactly right, man. Like even movies that have like a 54% on that site, they could have had a whole lot of positive reviews and or even reviews that were just like, it wasn't really my thing or wasn't, you know, whatever. But people will look at a movie and say it's got 54% and they're like, oh, this movie must suck. I'm not going to go see it.
Well, I mean, so. It does mean 54% of the people who saw it liked it.
Right, so. Right. Or like something that's like 40% or something. And you know, it could be a movie you actually liked, but, you know, you didn't watch it because you took the word of a review aggregator. So, like, you know, whatever. But, yeah, I can see partly why some people might not have gotten into it. I mean, first and foremost, like, movie critic people aren't really big on the American South just as a whole or, like, country on as a whole. So it's like, you're going to have a hard time appealing to certain sects of the audience who just like aren't going to understand this movie at all. Like the first couple of times I watched it, I didn't understand like the language or like even some of the stuff that they were talking about just because I don't come from that like sect of society. You know, this takes place in the Deep South in Mississippi during the Great Depression.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's kind of hard for some people to relate to that.
I know. I find that both.
I find it find it endearing.
That setting, you know, and time period, I think, are both interesting.
Right, and there's also like some of the movie. It goes through its like peaks and valleys of just sort of like, and then there's small like ticky tack like logical stuff. Like there's a part where I'm like, where did they get that car from? They didn't show that. And then, or like where they get the pliers from or where they, you know, just like small ticky tack stuff that people went ape shit on The Dark Knight Rises about. But that's a different story. But like, you know, so there's small part. There's parts in the movie where it's just kind of like just a little bit like it's firstly, the music in this movie is just like fucking tops.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's so good.
Yeah. It's
but there's a lot of the scenes that they have music in kind of linger a little bit too long. Like you could cut out like a minute out of each of them or so, just like long shots where it feels like it's kind of, they're basically doing it just so that they can use up as much of the song as they want, you know, but I mean, the music's great. So it's like, you can't really complain that much about it because the music's all just like fantastic. I love this type of music, like fucking, you know, through all different, you know, that old timey country type stuff, old folk music and shit. There's like that scene where they're doing the baptism shit towards the beginning.
Yeah.
That song is like kind of reminiscent, just a little bit of Sacred Heart music, which I'm a fan of. Just like the chord structure and progressions and stuff like that. Not quite the voicing that Sacred Heart singers do, but like, the music just like instantly sold me on it. And then, you know, it's the Coen brothers. You know, I'm not sure the Coen brothers can make a bad movie, you know?
Yeah, I mean, even when they make, like, their version of a bad movie is still, like, a pretty good movie.
Right, like, I would say my least favorite movie I've seen from them is Hail Caesar. Yeah. And even that, like,
that's still a fun movie.
I would still say it's a good movie, and there's stuff I enjoy about it. It's just, I would just say it's my least favorite one, you know? And so, and this is probably one of my favorites from them.
It might be one of the best John Goodman performances.
I love John Goodman. He is such, nobody talks enough about how wonderful of an actor John Goodman is.
Well, he's like an incredibly well-rounded actor too, because he's super funny too.
Like, he's funny. Yeah. He can be intimidating when he wants to be. You know, like this one, he's playing a completely different part from, you know, like what he played on Roseanne and like what he played
in the Big Lebowski.
His part in the Big Lebowski like his part that he played in 10 Cloverfield Lane, you know, like he just runs the gamut, and he's just such a wonderful actor. Mm-hmm. Every time I see John Goodman on the screen, I know I'm like, I'm going to enjoy this because he's just so good.
Yeah.
And a lot of, not all the time, but like similar to George Clooney, I think George Clooney's a great actor.
Yeah.
You know, you see Batman and Robin, at least Batman and Robin, I still get like enjoyment out of that movie. It's not quite the intended one, but you know,
it's still fun to watch.
Yeah. George Clooney is Batman. Wow. That's going to be great. Oh, the movie's not great.
My only complaint with George Clooney in this movie is that he's so bad at lip singing.
Yeah.
Like, he's really, really bad at
it. Yeah. Cause they had tried to have him sing like the main part on The Man of Constant Sorrow. Yeah. And he just sucked, so they went with someone else. And yeah, I would probably say the Soggy Bottom boys on the whole aren't real good at the guy who was Delmar. He actually sang his part.
Yeah. Tim Blake Nelson.
He like actually sang his part, so it seems like believable. Like the other two guys, they just sucked. So they just had them lip sync, and like especially on the yodeling part and in the jailhouse now, like you can obviously tell it's fake.
Yeah. Well, and this, it's just like when George Clooney goes to sing, it's like all of a sudden it's like a completely different voice.
Yeah.
It's like Marty McFly in Back to the Future. Also, you're like, what the fuck? Where did this come from?
Yeah. Pete, my associate here, Delmar O'Donnell, and he's like, hi, I am a man. It's like he's like singing with a country accent, and he's not. That's the other thing. He doesn't like, and George Clooney like had his uncle or something like read the script so that he could sort of get a feel for like what his character would sound like. But he's still like, he doesn't sound like he's from Mississippi at all. Still, maybe he's from up north, but like still he still sounds like George Clooney.
With a little
bit of a Southern accent. A very little.
I think it's more of that. I think it's the Southern accent that he wants to do, though. Like, because it is that more like Alabama Southern accent. It's not like that, like, super twangy, you know, like.
I mean, the rest of the movie, like, that was all, like, Alabama Southern accent. Like, deep South. Like, fucking John Goodman and Homer Stokes and those guys.
Yeah, but I'm saying.
That man, they sold his soul to the devil.
But I'm saying, like, John Goodman didn't sound like that, though. John Goodman had like more, it's because he's supposed to be like a more well-spoken Southern person. That's
right. But it's like he still, I guess to me, he just sounded like George Clooney still. He didn't sound Southern. Like, yeah, I get that he's different from like everyone else around there. You know, it sounds like he's like educated or something.
Yeah.
But it still just was George Clooney just saying George Clooney stuff. And then all of a sudden,
putting together a group of people to break into a casino and
to break into a casino and then to stop Mr. Freeze from firing off his big ice laser. But then he's like talking like George Clooney, and then he sings and he sounds like an actual folk singer. It's like, wow, that's kind of obvious, but that's very much not George Clooney. I think the other reason I love this movie so much is I love the Iliad and I love the Odyssey. So it's like to watch like a Great Depression era Odyssey movie. It's like,
yeah,
you sold me again, Coens, because I'm all for that.
Well, and it's a more like easily accessible way to tell that story.
Right.
Because, like, you know, just the way things were written.
And it doesn't follow it to a T. Well, but yeah, like, yeah, you can see similarities in there. You know, obviously, the John Goodman with the eye patch is obviously Polyphemus. You know, and George Clooney is Odysseus. Obviously, his wife is Penelope. Same as in the fucking Odyssey. But I like some of the stuff that's interesting and different about it. Like the radio DJ is supposed to be Homer.
Oh, okay.
And he, you know, he's the one who plays the Soggy Bottom Boys all the time, sort of spreads their message. Homer, you know, retelling the Odyssey and everything like that. That's interesting. Like the rail car driver is supposed to be Tircius, who like says stuff in the beginning. The fucking, I didn't catch this right away, and I'm kind of like feel stupid for not catching it right away, but like the warden who's hunting him down all movie long is Poseidon.
Yeah,
I didn't realize that, and then they end the movie with like
the big
floods. So it's like, it, you know, everything's getting all tied together. It's just like a well-made movie, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, see, well, that's my like big takeaway is like, I wouldn't necessarily list this if you were like name your top 20 favorite movies. This wouldn't necessarily make the list.
Yeah.
But I think it's such an incredibly well-made movie. Like I love every time I get to watch it because I just think it's so well-crafted.
Right.
You know,
even like the set design and everything, the look of the movie, they like drained some of the color on the movie so that it would have that like sort of brown look. Even just like the way it came about, like the Coens wanted to, basically neither one of them is, they have been on record as saying neither one of them has ever read the Odyssey, like the actual poem, which it's not exactly the most fun read in the world, and it's not the easiest one because it's like an ancient Greek poem, so it's like when I try to read Romance of the Three Kingdoms, I have to take it like 10 pages at a time because it's like an ancient Chinese novel, so it's like like neither one had ever read the Odyssey before. And like the actual title of the film when they were in the scene with the movie theater, which by the way is supposed to like mirror when Odysseus goes to the underworld. When they're in the movie theater, they're watching Sullivan's Travels, which kind of fucks with the timeline of this movie. Cause Sullivan's Travels came out in 1941, I think. And this is supposed to take place in 1937. But we're just going to skip that. And like the whole point of Sullivan's Travels is it's about a film director who wants to make a movie called Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? About people who live in the Depression era. And so basically the Coens were like, this is basically the type of movie that we think that they would make if that was the film director in Sullivan's Travels, you know, fucking made his movie.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So I don't really know what else to say about this movie, except that I feel like I know the Man of Constant Sorrow is like an actual song, but I feel like I've never actually heard like the original.
I've never, the original was made in like 1913, I think. It's a really old song.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. It has to sound like way different because there's no way, like that style of song that they do in this movie does not match that time period at all.
Either. Right.
You know, it's like completely like out of character for what like the style of like country music would have been back then.
Yeah. A lot of country music back then, it would have been more like that in the jailhouse now, right?
Yeah, exactly.
With or yodeling and all that, like the fucking,
or like, you know, You Are My Sunshine, like
right. Yeah, it wouldn't have been like a driving, you know, a driving country song, you know, with the fucking guitar going crazy and stuff like that. And yeah, that is a little bit out of its time period.
Yeah. It says 1913 by a partially blind fiddle player, Dick Burnett.
Good job, Dick. You made a really good song.
Well, the other thing that I saw too, relating to music trivia, is so, you know, I always thought that in the, you know, Tom Johnson, the character that's the guitar player,
yeah,
is supposed to be a reference to Robert Johnson.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is supposed to be a reference to Robert Johnson.
Well, it's not though. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm going for.
Oh,
is that's what I was when I was doing a little reading up on this, and so I will say that it's basically based on Robert Johnson, but it's named after an actual, like, Tom Johnson is a blues player from like the 1930s as well.
Right.
Trying to find, like, yeah, here. So, yeah, here. He shares his name and story with Tommy Johnson, a blues musician with a mysterious past who is said to have sold his soul to the devil at the crossroads, a story more often attributed to Robert Johnson. So they named him, I guess, doing like the, like, hipster, like, oh, Robert Johnson. Well, what about Tommy Johnson? But yeah, basically, like, I find that interesting, especially that they actually, like, pick him up at the crossroads.
Yeah.
And
that he, and if you listen on the movie, he says that he sold his soul to the devil, and they asked the devil what he looked like. And what he describes is actually the warden who's chasing those guys down.
Yeah.
So, and at the end, you know, he's like, laws are made for man. So it's like the warden, there's an illusion in there that the warden's actually the devil.
I didn't pick up on that, but now that you say that, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. He's Poseidon, but he's also the devil.
Yeah.
And we're mixing multiple theologies here. But I always thought that thing was interesting. This movie was actually my, like, because I saw this movie when I was like 10 or 11 years old or something like that. And this movie was actually my first introduction to what the Ku Klux Klan was.
That scene's intimidating. Like, it's when they first, like, roll up on
it. I had no idea, because I was watching. We used to go to, like, a family friend's house and stuff like that on Saturday nights, you know, with my parents, and they would take us, and a bunch of the friends would bring their kids, blah, 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 blah. And we just, like, they had this movie on there. My dad had bought this soundtrack because he had heard that it won, like, the Grammy or something like that. And he's like, oh, why don't I check this out? And he listened to it. He's like, I don't know, like, what to make of these. And my dad's friend was like, no, you got to watch the movie, then you'll understand the soundtrack just a little bit more.
Yeah.
And then, like, we watched it, and I had no idea what was going on during the Ku Klux, during the KKK, like, cross burning scene and everything. I'm like, who are they? Why are they doing that? And my dad's like, that's the Ku Klux Klan. They're very bad people. And I was like, okay. And then, like, you know, 6 months later in fucking history, we learn about the Klan. And I'm like, I know who those people are. They're in a movie. And it's called Birth of a Nation.
No, that scene, though, like, when they, like, when it's, like, just, like, the shot of, like, their faces being lit up by the fire. And then they turn around and, like, you see that. It's like, that would be terrifying if you rolled up on that in the middle of the woods. Like,
can I just say, I think my favorite song in the whole movie... Oh, well, maybe one of my, like, three favorite songs in the whole movie is the one that, like, that Homer Stokes is singing as the Grand Wizard.
Yeah.
Oh, Dan, won't you spare me off to another year? I don't know why. I love shit like that. I think that's such a...
While they're doing their weird, like, marching band routine.
Yeah. South Park has, like, ruined me at this point, where, like, every time I see a scene like that with the Klan and stuff, and they're, like, dancing around, all I'm picturing them, like, doing the whole what's under your robe thing that they do in South Park.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, I think it's safe to say that we both enjoy this movie quite a lot.
I thoroughly enjoy this movie. I love it. There's, like, a whole chapter on it in this book that I read sometimes called The Philosophy of the Coen Brothers. And even just, like, their comedy that they do.
It's a, like, funny movie.
There's so many levels to what the comedy is. I'm going to break the cardinal sin. I'm going to explain why something's funny.
Yeah.
But, like, for example, at the beginning of the movie, when they hop the train after getting through the fields, Ulysses goes up onto, like, the train. They're all chained together.
Yeah.
And he goes on there asking, why does any of you guys a blacksmith? You guys, you know, do anything like that? And he's up there asking for a blacksmith to break his chains while completely forgetting that he will get dragged behind, that he is still chained to two other guys.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, they get dragged. So the comedy is that he's talking there about trying to get his chains broken and completely forgets that he's chained together and isn't helping the guys on his chains and ends up biting him in the ass.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, just there's just like really like dry one-liners that are yeah. just really good too. Like
I love George Clooney just repeating over and over again. We're in a tight spot.
That spot.
He says it like seven times.
It's so good. Yeah, you just every time
he wakes up. Oh, my hair. I use pomade as well. I don't use Dapper Dan, but you know, I'm not a Dapper Dan man. I use that fop. I don't want fop. I want Dapper Dan, man.
Well, if you thought this podcast was bona fide, we appreciate you listening to it.
That's
we'd like
my
it.
Favorite thing about the whole movie. He's bona fide.
We appreciate your reviews and your comments and all that stuff. Wherever you're listening to the podcast, you can check it out on SoundCloud, on Google Play, on Stitcher, on iTunes, and on the podcast app of your choice. Facebook Alien Happy Hour, YouTube Alien Happy Hour. Go check out that for all sorts of videos and all that kind of stuff, all the Fast and the Curious and everything like that. And Twitter at Alien Happy Hour. Taylor, should we pull what our movie shall be?
Yeah, I think we should do it like Yahtzee, where you like shake it and then you slap it on the table and then you just like pick one.
Yahtzee. Gremlins.
Yeah, I win again. Gremlins. I've actually never seen it in full. I hear great things about it all the time. This is actually like my brother's favorite movie ever. Yeah. I've never watched it before. I hear wonderful things about it.
I watched it around Christmas time this year for the first time, and I enjoyed it. So, okay. I think it'll be a fun watch.
We used to actually have a, it was probably about like a foot tall or so. We had like a Magua.
Oh, okay.
That was like, and we used to have a neighborhood golf tournament, and we used it as like the guardian of the hole 1 year. And all our neighbors were like, what the fuck is that? We're like, I don't know. We just got home from vacation today. We had to throw something together.
Taylor is at Taylor Not So Gang. And I am at Ben Schwind for all your E3 live tweeting needs. So at Ben Schwind. And you can, of course, follow both of us at Alien Happy Hour. I forgot to mention this when I did all the other rigmarole, but it's especially important with Movie Club. If you're a fan of Movie Club, you can check out patreon.com/AlienHappyHour. And for $5, you get to hear Movie Club before everybody else.
You get to hear it a week before the normies.
Exactly. So if you are a hardcore Movie Club fan, that's a tier you might want to check out. Of course, if you only have a dollar to give or whatever, like, we appreciate that too. Every little bit helps. So that's patreon.com/AlienHappyHour. Thanks for listening. The Movie Club will return with Gremlins.